Good morning, everyone. This is The Takeaway. Congress is getting ready for a recess. That means it's tying up loose ends and also dealing with the extraordinary disagreements that have taken place. And we've reported on all this week, Amy, on health care reform. I'm John Huckenberry here with Amy Holmes, who's been with us all week. So it's interesting here on Friday. Joining us now is Representative Barney Frank, one of the senior members of the House of Representatives and also chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, which is getting ready for a vote in the House on a bill to cap compensation packages for bankers who participated in the federal bailout. First of all, Congressman Frank, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's talk about your bill for a second, and then I want to just talk a little bit about the timing. You've got three parts of essentially a regulation of pay packages for people who participate in a government bailout like we've seen.
No, it's for everybody.
It's for everybody.
The rules restricting people who are getting the government rescue money are already in place and they're being administered. But we actually began this before the rescue plan. This bill would apply in various ways to companies, whether or not they take the bailout money. In fact, one of the concerns people have had is that some companies have taken the money, have benefited, have gotten back into a good position, and now are going ahead with the kind of pay that we think is a problem. The second thing is it doesn't cap the pay. It deals with the structure of the pay. It does two things. First, for all public companies, and this is a bill we, frankly, began trying to do in 2006, where we have the problem of too much money being paid, we don't regard that as a government issue, but rather as a shareholder issue. The problem is that in corporations, the pay is set by the board of directors for the CEO. They're very closely connected. There's no labor management relationship there, no arm's length relationship. And you had a recent case of one company, 72% of the revenue was going to go to compensation. What we're doing is borrowing something that has worked very well in England. It's called Say on Pay. When the annual proxy form is sent out to shareholders, the company has to include the compensation packages of the top officials, and the shareholders can say whether they approve it or disapprove it. Now, it's not a binding vote.
Well, if it's not binding, how is it going to do anything?
Well, if it were binding, it would prevent people from being paid at all. But boards of directors do not easily reject what the shareholders say. And, in fact, the experience in England where they've had this is that in the last year when a number of those packages have been voted down, they are adjusted downward. Now, that's combined with the Securities and Exchange Commission making it easier for people to challenge members of the board of directors, shareholders. So what we have found in England, and I think it's logical here, and that's a general impression of, for instance, the investor advocacy groups, the shareholder defense groups, that if you have that and it is voted down, the board of directors will pay attention.
What do you say to the argument, Congressman Frank, and I want to get Amy Holmes in here in just a second, but what do you say to the argument that a lot of people are saying, including New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo, that the barn door is open, the horses are gone, Congress is really lagging behind the compensation packages that continue to proliferate?
In 2006, when the Democrats were still in the minority, I and my Democratic colleagues on the House Financial Services Committee put this bill forward. Unfortunately, the Republicans controlled the House and wouldn't let it be voted on. In 2007, before there was a TARP, we got it through the House as Democrats. The Senate was only 51-49 Democratic. Republicans were opposed to it. The Republicans have been very much opposed to this, and it didn't pass. So the answer is that we tried, those of us who were Democrats. Congress is not a unilateral, a monolithic institution. And the fact is that the Democrats had tried on this. The Republicans, it's a party issue, had rejected it. As to the TARP, we did put some tough compensation restrictions into the TARP. But this was a philosophical difference with the Bush administration. They didn't really believe in them, didn't use them much. The Obama administration has been much tougher with those, and that's, by the way, one of the reasons why several of the companies that received TARP money were so quick to pay it back. But the problem is that once they've paid it back, they're under no restrictions, and we are now again trying to put restrictions on. And there's a second piece that says, and this is, I think, going to be even more important, the problem we have is not simply that they pay large amounts, which if the shareholders want to pay out their money, that they could do it, although we want to give them the tools to object. But the way it happens is this. People get bonuses in many of these cases, the decision makers, and the bonuses work in a very interesting way. If the people who are eligible for bonuses take a gamble and it pays off, they make a lot of money. But if they take a gamble and it blows up in their faces, they don't lose anything. So you have an incentive from the compensation structure for people to take too much risk. And that's where you get a systemic problem, because too much risk is taken. And this is something that's been observed by a number of people, Paul Volcker and even Ben Bernanke. And so the second part of our bill is to say to all financial companies, you'll be subject to the Securities Exchange Commission reviewing your compensation packages. And if you have packages that act this way, that are kind of heads you win and tails you break even, and therefore you're going to take too much risk and cause problems, not just for your company, but for the whole economy, the SEC won't let you do it.
Congressman, this is Amy Holmes here. I think people can understand the idea of taking too much risk, but you said earlier that they're making too much money. Just a simple question. What number is too much?
Whatever the shareholders say, as I try to distinguish, the federal regulation will not go to amounts. This bill has two major parts. What we are saying is that it's up to the shareholders to decide, because it's their money. And that's why we have the say on pay. We do believe that there's a lack of resistance by the board of directors to CEOs wanting more and more money. And we think that, let me say, if I were a shareholder, I would think that 72% of the revenue of a company going to compensation set by the people who are getting it was a mistake. But we don't have a government role here.
But Congressman, let me ask you.
To empower the shareholders, and what we've seen in England is they voted to say no. And that, again, we've worked very closely with the advocates of investor groups.
Sure. Let me ask you this:
Are shareholders
actually asking for this legislation? I mean, is this a constituent group that is lobbying you for this?
Yes, shareholders, and this goes back, as I said, in 2006. It's not so much individual shareholders. There are groups, Nell Minow of the Corporate Library and people in the AFL-CIO Pension Fund. There are institutional investors, people who represent investor interests. And they have been a strong supporter of this, and the strong supporters. And we are working with them.
Pension funds and the like. Well, let's shift gears here for a moment. The vote is going to take place today. You talked about the bill being a response to the fact that there's a Democratic majority suddenly in the House and Senate, and you have the chance to really take action on this bill. But it seems to me that the Obama strategy in dealing with health care this week is actually to shift towards the center, to appease the Blue Dog Democrats and the conservatives, not to push a progressive agenda in the first years of the Obama administration with the majorities in both houses.
Well, I guess I don't understand the relevance of that question to what the committee I chair is trying to do. We are going a little beyond the Obama administration, but in fact, what the Obama administration has tried to do, and I haven't worked as hard in health care as elsewhere, I'm a strong supporter of a strong public
I'm just talking generally politically. It seems like it's shaping out to be...
I don't understand. First place, there's not just one strategy. There are areas where, and it depends on where you get the votes, to be honest. What's happening in healthcare, and I have not been directly involved, and I'm a little surprised that, you know, I do think the compensation issue was a very important one and not fully understood. I thought we were going to be talking more about that.
No, we are.
There seems to be some confusion about the, you know, which piece of it does what. But the answer on healthcare is that I think those who say, let me put it this way. I think those who think bipartisanship is an end in itself are wrong. I think it should be a means to passing a bill. Now, where you can get broad agreement, I think that's a good thing. But I would not allow something you could otherwise pass to be diluted. One difference is that there does appear to be more political support for these restrictions on excessive risk-taking and giving the shareholders power than there is for some parts of the health care.
Well, Congressman,
so the answer is just a practical one. There are Democratic dissenters on what I would like to see done in the health care, which we don't have in the area of compensation.
Well, Congressman, let's get to that, this idea of strategy with health care. I'm sure you're aware there's a YouTube video of you getting a lot of attention this week where you say that if we get a good public option, it could lead to a single-payer system, and that's the best way to reach single-payer. What do you say about that?
Yes, that's true, because the argument is this. The argument from conservatives is a very contradictory one. One, if you have a public option, that will be a terrible thing for the society. It will be bad. It will undermine health care. And two, that it could lead to single payer. Well, it can only lead to single payer if it's very successful. I think that, in fact, a public option is a legitimate test of single payer, if I'm right. And single payer, by the way, is Medicare. And I think Medicare works much better than the alternatives that preceded it. But the answer is yes. If, in fact, the public option proves to be so popular, that will lead to a single payer system, because more people will gravitate to it. Well, and if it turns out to be the problem that the conservatives think, it won't be. So I think it's a good, legitimate way to test it.
All right, Congressman, although it's at odds with the political dynamics typically in Washington, start small and get bigger. It's harder to do big things in the second half of the first term. Representative Barney Frank, thanks so much for joining us.
Wrong. You mistake that.
No.
Well, I'm talking about
I'm in trouble now.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.